No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People the Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael Brown, and I'm coming to you live from Des Moines, Iowa, where we're doing a special broadcast as we are at the caucuses here in Iowa. And we're very lucky to have a special guest with us tonight. I'm joined by my co-host, Maria Sanchez, one of the best in the business. We really appreciate the fact that Maria has helped coordinating all this. We're calling in on cell phones, so we hope that everything goes okay. This is an experiment in internet radio, but we're here in Iowa, and we're lucky enough to have Representative Garcia, the United States Representative from the District of Columbia, with us tonight, and we're going to talk about what's going on in Iowa. Maria, are you with us?
I am. Good evening, and I'm so excited to hear what you're learning with your boots on the ground for the rest of us.
Oh, my God, we're learning so much. I can't tell you, 38 years in national politics, and I've learned more, I think, in the last 24 hours than I have in the last 24 years. So,
boy, what a tease that is.
Yeah, it really has been amazing. Representative Garcia, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Thank you very much for the invite. Very excited to also be here in Iowa live. And so looking forward to sharing some of my experiences here on the ground in Iowa.
Well, before I let Maria ask a question, let me ask you a question. We just came from a big Latino event where you spoke, and, you know, I just thought it was an amazing event. So why don't you tell us what you thought of the event? And why the Latino event is so important.
That's right. And what Senator Brown is talking about is an event that was organized by LULAC. Now, LULAC is a national Latino advocacy group, much like the NAACP for African Americans and for Latinos. They advocate basically for inclusion of Latinos in every aspect of American life. And so what they were doing is, some of you may know that Hispanic population is not very large here in the state of Iowa, but it's grown over the last decades considerably. And so last time around, when the last presidential election took place, very few Latinos participated in the process, in the caucuses process. And so what LULAC set out to do, and other national organizations and local, was to increase the number so that it could reflect the growth in Latino population. And so I was at that event for two reasons. One was to do the job of the U.S. Representative to promote statehood for the District of Columbia. And to that end, I explained to them that I wanted them to submit a resolution on our behalf whenever they go to their distinct various caucuses. And so a lot of them said that they would. And I expressed to them the importance of submitting resolution on behalf of statehood, because it's important that we show the general population that Latinos are not only about immigration. I mean, they somehow think that if you're a Latino that you only care about immigration. And so I told them the necessity to show the general population that, Latinos care about other issues. And certainly, equality for citizens of Washington, D.C., it's an important issue that should be brought to the attention, not only of Washingtonians, but really other people outside of the state. And so I talked to them about that. But I also emphasized to them the need to get more Latinos to get out and caucus, because the reason why we're here is because there's so much attention being placed on Iowa. And all this national attention, we believe, can benefit the District of Columbia, because people can know about our plight that's been going on for so many years, and this is a great way to expose it at a national level. And so the same thing happens with the Latino population here. If we're able to see a lot of Latinos come out and vote, and even though we're not in great numbers here in the state, but if the numbers are high and they reflect the growth of the population, then we can get an indication how Latinos are going to be coming out throughout these primaries and caucuses. So those were my two main purposes for joining, you know, that event earlier today, which was very, very successful. They had all kinds of press. We had a couple of key officials there, including Congressman Raul Grijalva. And so I was very pleased that I was able to speak on the floor for a few minutes and talk about those two important issues.
Representative Garcia, was this a forum that LULAC sponsored?
Yeah, I think the question was if this was a forum. So what this was, it was actually a training. So what they're trying to do is they're trying to educate the Latino population on how to conduct these caucuses, you know, how to attend and to participate in them. And so they have some mock trials about the whole process and some training. And so the objective there was mainly to get caucuses goers to learn about the process, because we know that overall Latinos normally participate at a lower rate in the political process, you know, to begin with. And so they need an additional level of coaching to get them out there. And certainly this training was very, very useful, I found.
So how lovely that they did like a mock run of what to expect tomorrow and showed them the ropes so that they wouldn't be intimidated and they actually might have the confidence to really do show up as long as they're registered to vote and can prove that they live in the state of Iowa.
That's right. And a lot of them, you could see that when they got out of there, they were their confidence level was a lot higher. Because I can see that the process is a bit cumbersome, at least in the Democratic side. And so for them to actually have staged the whole process, which should last, I understand, about 30 minutes to get it organized, they were very pleased to be part of this whole process. And, of course, the media was all over and recording everything. And what I expressed to this, I guess, expert in the field of caucusing, I told them to go out to their communities and be sure to get people excited to come out tomorrow, because it is on their shoulders now as educated people in the process to get out there and get the rest of our folks to come out and participate in the process.
Now, Representative Garcia, I'm very familiar with LULAC because the county that I live in has a very large Hispanic population. But do you have to be a Democrat to be a part of LULAC?
Do you have to be, I'm sorry, I missed it, you have to be, what was that again?
Do you have to be a Democrat to be a part of LULAC?
Oh, in fact, LULAC is a nonpartisan entity, just like the NAACP. One of the things that was not discussed there, they did have, you know, members of the various campaigns at the end of the process, that just kind of like they gave them a courtesy 3 minutes for everybody to say something, but the total process, in fact, had nothing to do with politics. What they did is I think they got into the film industry and they said, you know, if you're supporting this film, you go here, if you go that, and so on and so forth. And they just basically, based on the industry of film, is how they conducted that whole mock process. So they stayed out of politics and candidates that they would support. So no, LULAC is not a partisan entity, and they promote every, you know, political candidate the same way, 100%.
Okay, because that's how it is here in Southern California, but I didn't know if it was different, because my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, also Senator Brown, is that if you're a Republican and you're in the caucus voting system in Iowa, you come in, you vote, and it's usually by a secret ballot. It's the Democrats that have you divide up based on the candidate that you're supporting, not the Republicans.
Well, that's exactly right. Yeah, and you know the old saying, Maria, that Will Rogers said, I belong to no organized political movement. I'm a Democrat. And it's true today as it was back in his time that the Republicans, yes, they have a straight vote. It goes right. But the Democrats have a much more complicated process where you line up with the candidates and you're allowed to lobby each other and get a group together. And if the group doesn't have enough people in it to reach this threshold, which I believe is 15%, then the other guys in the room can come over and lobby you. Let's say you're an O'Malley delegate, but there's only two of you. The other two candidates, Clinton and Sanders, can come over, their people, and try to get you to come over to their side. And it's really a lot more complicated for us. And frankly, correct me if I'm wrong, but for us, it's made things that much more interesting and fun because it's really, really a grassroots thing. Now, obviously, the Republicans are way more efficient about it. And you'll probably know earlier, I would guess, who the Republican nominee out of Iowa is going to be before you know who the Democrat is. But it's fun to see so many people getting involved and so many people, the political process really working at a grassroots level. But yeah,
so we're going to go over that, but I don't want to do that while we have Representative Garcia on the line, so we can go into more detail about how it unfolds if people aren't familiar with it, because I find it absolutely fascinating. And as you said, so grassroots, and like the good old days that, well, tell me about that person and the back and forth and the percentages, et cetera. But it also is occurring at the precinct meeting places, of which there's 1,700 precincts in the state of Iowa. So you're talking about drilling down into neighborhoods.
Right. And again, this is what's making the process a little difficult for us because, as Representative Garcia said, we're here to get them to embrace a resolution for D.C. statehood, because if we can get enough of the precinct caucuses to embrace that, then two things could happen. It could become part of the platform for the Iowa Party, or it could, on either side, Republican or Democrat, or they could actually, if we got enough supporters, the presidential candidates would really kind of be forced to address the issue. But that means we had to reach out to 1,700 different groups. We're still calling them. We'll be calling them tomorrow. We've got a volunteer staff of, maybe a dozen people making the calls. But, yeah, it's been difficult to get a hold of that many people.
So here's the other thing, if you don't mind, Senator Brown, because, again, we keep acquiring new listeners every week. Folks might not understand what it is that you're trying to do with Representative Garcia about D.C. and statehood.
Well, as you may or may not know, the District of Columbia does not have voting representation in either House of Congress or control over its own budget or legal system, actually. So Congress controls the city, and it causes us many problems. Not only no representation, but our budget is delayed. All our laws have to sit in Congress, where they can either be approved or denied. So it's really not, we're really not in a situation where democracy works the way it should in the District of Columbia. So that's one of the reasons that we're going out to the caucuses, because it's important for us to make this point, as Representative Garcia said, about getting Latinos involved. It's also important for us to get people in the states involved, because we can't bestow statehood on ourselves. We need people out in every state to support us, so their members of Congress will support us. And the reason we want to be a state is because if you become a state, then you're equal to all other states. If you legislate voting rights for us, or you give us budget autonomy, or you give us something else, we really don't get the package, the whole package. It doesn't make us equal. But statehood makes us equal, because all states enter the union on equal footing.
So you touched on it briefly, but Representative Garcia was impressing upon the Latinos how this will be of benefit to their population. And with all due respect, Senator Brown, you're very loquacious and persuasive, but how do you get the normal folks, I don't mean normal as in the run-of-the-mill person who lives in Iowa, to care about D.C. becoming a state?
Well, if I may step in, this is exactly what I told a bunch of Latinos that showed up to caucus or to go to the training today. I explained to them specifically the need to have me be a full voting member of Congress because I became the first Latino elected in the nation's capital, and I've been an activist for a long, long time in our nation's capital, advocating for driver's license for undocumented people, to maintain the status, the memorandum of understanding that our city has with the police, where nobody is asked whether they're undocumented or otherwise. I have been advocating for the inclusion of our community into the political process. So the best thing that they can do here in Iowa, the Latinos, is support D.C. to become a state so that I can continue to advocate on their behalf at the national level, because it was I who headed the effort in the nation's capital to stage a rally against Donald Trump when he came on behalf of and said all these nasty things about our community. So you need a strong voice to advocate for you in your nation's capital, and that's me. But I need for them to support me so that I can continue to advocate for them and do it with stronger forces by being a full member of the U.S. House of Representatives. And that's how they can benefit from having D.C. become a state.
Which makes a lot of sense.
Right. And I think the point you're making, Maria, is a good one, that yes, there are many purposes here. And Representative Garcia is absolutely right about the Latina community. And one of our problems is that it's hard to get you involved because as we say, we don't have a dog in that fight. Well, mm-hmm. You know, members from California and Texas and Nevada and Louisiana, it really doesn't affect them directly. But so we have to reach out to people and talk to them on the basis of their sensibilities about democracy. You know, we're the only country in the world that does this. Everybody agrees it's wrong. I mean, everybody, 80% of America. And even though it tends to be a partisan issue, 80% of Democrats agree that we should have full rights to everybody else, and like 78% of Republicans. So it's not even much of a partisan issue among the population. It is on Capitol Hill, but Republicans and Democrats say, yeah, we're all Americans. We all deserve the same rights. But yeah, that is a difficult problem for us to get, because the congressman in California is concerned about his constituents and water rights and all the other things. And then in the end, we have we have a delegate to Congress, Eleanor Holmes Norton, but she doesn't have a vote either. So we're all in the same boat, and there's nothing to trade. You can't come to me from California and say, if you vote for my water rights bill, I'll vote for your statehood bill, because I don't have a vote, and neither does she, and neither does Representative Garcia.
I'd like to add that if you just tuned in, you're listening to BBS Station 1 with Shadow Senator Michael D. Brown and Representative Garcia. If you'd like to join in the conversation, you can call us toll-free at 888-627-6008. Or if you're in the United States and Canada, we have a direct line at 323-744-4831. This is Maria Sanchez, and we'd love you to join in on the conversation. Can you two give us what it's like to be in the streets of Des Moines? What is there kind of a energy that you're picking up on, or are people making friends with strangers because they're standing in line and it's all the country is focusing on this weekend and tomorrow?
Franklin, you want to answer that one? We'll both answer it.
Sure.
You go first, Franklin.
I tell you, the experience here, this is the first time I visited this wonderful state of Iowa, and not clear if it's because people have been gearing up and getting ready to host a lot of people, that they're being overly friendly. I find that the people in Iowa are incredible hosts. They're just super nice people. There's a lot of outsiders, a lot of people from other states are here. Everywhere you go, a lot of media presence everywhere you go. There are all kinds of people organizing events. There's just a lot of energy going on everywhere. People are, I guess they look forward, they take it very serious. You know, they don't joke about this. It's very, at least on the Democratic side, it's a very, very committed process. And they got it down from the beginning to end. And they're organizing. They're getting people out tomorrow early in the morning. Overall, it's an incredible experience. If you've never done the Iowa caucuses, you ought to make plans for next time around and come out and be part of this process, because it is definitely worth understanding it and getting the energy and the and just overall, it's just very, very contagious. And hopefully you'll take it back to your home state and become more organized and active wherever it is that you came from.
You just gave me goosebumps,
you know,
describing
to give you an example,
that.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. Michael, you've been there before, right?
No, never been here before, Maria.
Oh, this is your first time too.
Yes, 38 years in politics, I've never been here. But just to give you an example of what Representative Garcia is talking about, he and I went to a house party earlier today where they were organizing. We've been trying to get around to all the campaigns, and they were organizing people for Governor O'Malley. And you probably understand that he's in third place, in a distant third place. And we went to this rally, and it was at somebody's house, and so many people showed up. I think probably a couple of hundred people showed up.
Wow.
In this guy's living room. There were so many people that they had to move the rally onto the front lawn. And when O'Malley showed up, you know, because he couldn't speak, there was no room for him in the house. So they moved everybody out in the front lawn, and I'm estimating this, but I bet there were at least half a dozen, if not more, full-blown media operations there from people like CNN and MSNBC and, you know, all the standard ones that you've seen to I was interviewed by a TV station that's broadcast at Northwestern University, and people that appear on the Conan O'Brien show. There was a guy from Conan O'Brien. So, yeah, there's kind of a circus atmosphere to it, but, yeah, just a ton of energy. The only thing that I've ever done that's even similar is to go to the nominating conventions. And they don't even have the same kind of energy, at least the Democratic convention doesn't, because when you get there, you already know who the candidate is.
And are you confining your visit to the city of Des Moines?
Yes. Just
okay.
Because there's so much area to cover. We've actually gone to the suburbs of Des Moines, and we've just started, you know, I think we'll focus more on touching base with Republican campaigns tomorrow, but because we've concentrated the first three or four campaigns we've gone to, first three campaigns we've gone to are all the Democrats, Clinton, O'Malley, and Sanders.
And so you're going to go across the aisle, are you?
Oh, yeah. We think it's a bipartisan issue. And this thing that Representative Garcia was talking about today, there were Republicans as well as Democrats there. In fact, the guy that was leading the whole thing mentioned that his mother was coming and she was a Bush delegate.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, we're also staying at the hotel where all the Bush people are staying. So we've run into a lot of them, and we've gotten to lobby them a little on the side. Franklin did a wonderful job this morning lobbying a bunch of Bush people who are up from Florida and other places in the South supporting him.
So tell me this, both of you as Democrats, are you able to go into a caucus and watch it unfold, or do you have to be registered and live in Iowa in order to participate?
No, anybody can come in.
Really?
To the public.
But
yes.
You can't speak.
I don't know if you can speak, but you can't vote.
I see. Of course.
You have to be a registered voter to be able to vote, or you have to be of an age that you could register by the time the election arrives.
Okay. So we have Anise on line three who's calling into the program. Welcome, Anise. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm just so excited. I want to, first of all, compliment our senators, our representative for going to Iowa and really advocating for D.C. statehood. And I think they are being very, very successful. The word is getting out. Thank you so much, Senator Brown, everybody. Just thank you. And we have a list that we're calling from D.C. to help. And we're really having some success. I talked to one of the chairmen of the caucus, and we said we're asking them to submit a resolution at the caucus tomorrow to endorse and encourage their caucus to pass the resolution for to support D.C. statehood. And he just said immediately, I'm supporting it. I'm for D.C. statehood. He gave me his email address so I can send him the resolution. And this is coming, this is being spearheaded by our delegation, and it's just really exciting because we're not there, but we are able to participate from D.C. And I just
want
to say it's really exciting.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
Nice. Well done. Thank you for sharing, Anise, and thanks for your passion.
But I have to thank Senator Brown and the delegation, too. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
And it's you guys making all the calls and setting it all up, and it's been great. Thank you.
Well, thank you. All right. Free D.C. statehood now.
There you go. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
That's what makes America beautiful is people who roll up their sleeves, get in the trenches, and actually start working.
Well, you know, let me ask Representative Garcia a question, because the energy today at the Latino thing at LULAC was really, really great. And, you know, my feeling... My mother's parents were immigrants. They voted in every election. I think people that have either a background of coming from another country or understand the culture of the country in which they or their parents or their grandparents were born, understand how important this process is. How important, you know, because in a lot of countries you don't get the right to participate, and that is one of the things that makes America great, and that's one of the reasons that we're so dedicated to statehood, because we want the people of the District of Columbia to have full participation. You know, nobody in America, I have yet to meet an American that says, I'd rather have been born somewhere else. I think all Americans understand that for many, many reasons, especially participation and freedom, America is really the greatest nation on earth, I believe.
Have you seen that clip? I'm sorry. Go ahead, Representative.
Yeah, no, what I was going to add is that, in our community, many times, they don't understand a lot of the implications in the political process. And so I was very pleased as I was talking about statehood and the need for them to support and introduce a resolution at their caucus, how a lot of the Latinos came to me afterwards after I had finished speaking and said to me that they will submit a resolution. Because I think is that a lot of this issue with statehood has to do with the information factor. I don't think that a lot of people, English-speaking people don't know that in Washington, D.C., we don't have full democracy. And so when it gets out to the immigrant community, the information of the misinformation is even greater. And so I after I finished talking at LULAC, I then headed over and went to a bunch of young Latinos and explained to them what I was in Iowa, and they embraced the movement right away, and took a bunch of photos with the DC flag, and said that they would support in any way they could. And so I think a lot of this has to do with getting the message out and letting people know that the people in Washington, D.C. don't have the same rights that they have in their home state, and that many times they take for granted. Once you explain to them the situation of Washingtonians, that they don't have a voting representative in the U.S. Congress in the House, or two senators that can vote on behalf of the people of the District of Columbia, they are in shock, and they simply want to help change that. And that was shown very evident. It actually is showing throughout the whole region where we're going. Everywhere we go, the support for this statehood is overwhelming. I have just been so pleased that every place we go, when we tell people what we're here for, they immediately take an interest, and they want to join the movement. And the movement in Iowa is going to grow and grow and grow. And I can tell that it will grow because there is a lot of interest to make the change take place on.
So my question is, I haven't been able to find out, are the caucuses like we have with our polls? They're open from 7 in the morning till 8 at night? And if so, how do people start gathering into groups to have their conversations?
No, they're not open that late. It's a much shorter process. My understanding, although there's no closing time, my understanding is they go from like 7 to 9. The Republican one's probably even shorter because you come in and vote. You know who you're going to vote for. It's probably even a shorter process for Republicans. But even the Democrats who lobby back and forth, what people they could go well into the night. And if the Republicans had the same system that we have with so many candidates, they might. But with three candidates, people here, we have a person that's leading us around. And by the way, we should thank Tamara Harrison and John, who's been so helpful in getting us around. But these are people that have been in Iowa for a long time and have actually formed a group called Iowans for D.C. Statehood.
Oh.
And they're telling us they're thinking 9 o'clock it'll be over.
Well, because what's interesting,
we'll have the results before midnight.
When people do the caucus vote, it's actually to send delegates to attend a county convention, and then from the county convention, they select delegates to go to the congressional district state convention, and then those delegates choose the delegates to go to the national convention. So much like our votes with the Electoral College, you're not actually voting for a person, but you're voting for somebody to vote.
That's right. That's
which
right.
Is, there's lots of layers here. So when they say that the winner is declared, it's not really accurate, because what it is it's the state convention making that decision. But they say because the delegates usually represent who the winner is, they call that the winner.
Right. And, it's the same as the Electoral College.
Yes.
You hear on the night of the election that whoever won wins, they really haven't won yet. They have to get the electoral vote. But, of course, it's assumed that California has, I don't know how many votes, they have a ton of votes, that all those electoral votes go to Jeb Bush or Hillary Clinton or whoever won the state of California. But in a rare instance in the District of Columbia, we have three electoral votes, and one of our electors several years ago refused to cast her vote for Al Gore, who won in D.C., because we didn't have statehood. And she actually refused to cast her vote. So he only got two of the three electoral votes in the District of Columbia, and nobody got the other vote. She just wouldn't vote.
Wow.
So it's possible to do that, even though it's almost unheard of. But, yeah, it's a similar thing. You're right. And Maria, if you could think of a way to make it more complicated, I'm sure the Democrats would be interested.
Yes, okay. Because between what the caucus does, I love the whole almost like backroom haggling that goes on. And I would imagine that it depends, too, on who's more passionate, who's more articulate, and who's more persuasive, that helps sway people, right? I mean, we're humans. We we go with enthusiasm and sometimes not all the facts necessarily, but that, to me, that would be fascinating to be able to watch how that goes down.
Yes.
Are you guys going to be able to do that? Do you have that on your itinerary for tomorrow?
Yes, we're going to go to caucuses. And you know what? It's an amazing thing in politics because I forget how many Republican candidates there are, but there are at least a dozen, and there's three on the Democratic side. So you've got 15 candidates, and every person you talk to is absolutely sure that their candidate is going to walk away the winner. And it doesn't matter if you're talking to Jeb Bush's people who are at the bottom of the Republican ladder right now, or close to the bottom, or if you're talking to Martin O'Malley's people. They frankly, correct me if I'm wrong, but they were among some of the most enthusiastic people that we've met. And last time I looked, he had like 3 or 4% of the vote in the polls. So, you know, he's at best a long shot, but his people, I mean, that is really the most wonderful thing, like you just said, Marie, about the process, that it's so grassroots and that everybody thinks they've got a shot and they're out there enthusiastic. And you know what? I think personally, and I think democracy is something that you need to feed on a regular basis. And I think this really does feed our democracy, and so does voting.
Well, interestingly enough, there was a poll done by an organization called Morning Consult, and they released their results this week, which said that 50% of voters said that they would support reducing the influence of Iowa and New Hampshire in the presidential nominating process because they get all the attention.
Right.
And then there's the rest of us, the 48 of us, then 49 if we count you with your District of Columbia. Yeah. So there's definitely, it'll be interesting to see if there are changes. I guess there were changes in the late 60s and early 70s because they didn't like what went down at the Democratic Convention in Chicago. So change begets change. It would be interesting to see if they will create changes or if it's going to continue to keep on keeping on.
That's right, yeah.
Well, that's how I became a superdelegate.
Let me just sign off. Before I go, Senator Brown and Maria, let me just add that tomorrow we'll be visiting high school students to promote statehood to them. And the overwhelming number of young people that we have seen at the various events that we have gone to, it's amazing. I don't know if this is the Bernie phenomenon or a combination of just the fact that young people want to overall get more engaged, but we've seen every place we've gone, the number of young people has outnumbered all the other population, and so I'm not clear what that is, but we're very excited to see that, and so I'm excited that tomorrow we're going to carry this statehood message to various high school students, because that's where you want to start. You want to start early and let the young people know that they need to be involved in changing the injustice that's taking place in their national capital, that people over 670,000 U.S. citizens that by simply living in the U.S. capital don't have the same rights that they do. And I think that if they know this young, that they're more inclined to get involved in that process. So I thank you so much for the opportunity, and I look forward to continue to advocate for this statehood in this beautiful state, and I know that this is going to be a very, very successful trip for us, and we're going to see a lot of benefits coming out of this trip, and I can tell that that's going to be the case just because I've seen so many people supporting this statehood here, in at least in Des Moines, Iowa, but I'm sure that we can spread that message throughout the I want for this statehood coalition is growing, and you can see it grow and grow constantly. I picked up a newspaper here, which I photographed, and inside of that newspaper was an insert of one of our resolutions. And I was, this is one of the free papers that you pick up, much like, you know, your local paper, your community paper that you pick up. But inside of it, there were a bunch of inserts, and one of them was the resolution for this statehood. And I was very pleasantly surprised to see that. And so you can see that the message is getting out, and that's exactly what we want to do. And while I've been here, I've also have been documenting, you know, the various places we've gone to, the signage that we see for statehood everywhere. Just very, very pleased that we are able to carry the message of statehood on behalf of so many citizens in the District of Columbia that currently have no voice in the U.S. Congress. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Well, and thank you for your time, Representative Garcia. Appreciate it.
Yes, okay. Thank you so much. And we'll talk to you again soon.
Yes, and Senator, you're right. It is only for 2 hours that they have the caucuses. They start at 7 o'clock your time in Iowa. So it'll be.
Yeah.
So that means it's interesting because it's outside the news cycle, too, in terms of timing, for especially for you on the East Coast, your folks on the East Coast. Because aren't you in Central Time in Iowa?
Yes, 1 hour behind the East Coast. So
right,
yes,
so nine. That's going to make for a late night for a lot of people. But how stimulating and how exciting! And I guess the Des Moines Register said that Trump is up again, up by 5, I think, and Clinton by 3.
Yeah.
So anything is going to be able to happen because Ted Cruz is apparently still close, too. So it will be interesting to see how it unfolds. And what are your thoughts about it, Senator?
Well, the Republicans, that's a great question. First, let me answer your earlier, make a comment on what you said earlier about people wanting to change the process. Because Iowa and New Hampshire get too much attention. You know, that in the last election, we heard that a lot. We heard at the national convention, for example, people coming and saying that each one of the presidential candidates on both the Republican and Democratic side have been to Iowa and New Hampshire, you know, 36 times. But the Democratic candidate in a solidly Democratic state didn't come at all. And the same thing was true of the Republican, you know, in a solidly Republican state, they just didn't show up. They focus on, you know, the early primaries and what we call the I forget what we call them, but there's a battleground states, you know, the ones where they thought they had a shot. So they want to change the process, you know, so that they think everybody should get a chance to hear what these people have to say and interact with them.
And before you continue, Senator, we have Taboo on line 3. She has a comment. Welcome to the program, Taboo. Thank you for listening.
Taboo, how are you?
Doing okay. Great. Working with all the organizations that I can to push statehood. Stand Up for Democracy, I heard a Nice call a little while ago. We work very hard with them as well. I try to work with everyone for statehood. And I would like to thank all of you for your efforts that you are and the great comments that you're making about our home. But, however, I would like...
Yeah.
Hello, am I still on?
Yeah, you're still on. Can you hear us?
Okay,
we hear you.
Yeah, great. Well, I just wanted to say, however, there is something that I think we must never lose focus of, and I think there is a great question we must ask ourselves. Statehood for who? Now, I happen to be one who is of an ethnic group who, in many cases, it has not always been such a great country for, you know? We fought hard. We love it. And our cause seems to have been forgotten. So the question is, are we even considered in the equation?
Well, certainly you're considered in the equation in Washington, D.C., Taboo. We have a majority. We no longer have a majority population that's African American. I think we have like 49.8% or something African American. But you're still the largest group. Single group, ethnic group in the District of Columbia. So certainly, you're included in our effort. Does America...
Our agendas, it appears to me, just how I feel, is like you say, you mean your parents came from, that were immigrants and many others, and which I welcome. But it seems as though the more immigrants come, how many latches on and begins to support us and our cause and our issues? Like, we never, like, repairing the damages of slavery, you know? I mean, the Democratic Party, you know, no one even wants to even think about it. So it's very difficult, and I wanted to catch Garcia before he left, you know, but I missed the question. So I'll ask you all, can an illegal alien vote in the District of Columbia?
No. No illegal alien can vote anywhere in America because it's a felony. So do some? Yes. But in the state of Iowa, in the last caucuses, they prosecuted three people for the entire state who voted illegally as immigrants, and they dropped the charges on two of them because they convinced the court that they didn't understand that they couldn't vote. So they thought they were American citizens, but they were in fact not. Whether, you know, we adequately address the issues of African Americans, I would say, is a different issue that goes to the core of the racism that's been part of not only our country, but every country since its inception. And, you know, as Dr. King said, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. And I would say that racism anywhere is a threat to equality everywhere. So yeah, if that's as an African American, you want to, you know, you think that illegal immigrants are getting too much power, too much attention, and you have to face that through the political process.
And interestingly enough, Taboo, tomorrow begins February and Black History Month. And I'm curious what kind of focus is there in D.C., because I know in California, there's like almost a, if you will, a celebration every day because of the notable folks in the history of not only our country, but in our state and et cetera, et cetera. So that's a beautiful opportunity to create more visibility.
Well, yes, it is. It is. But, you know, what I would like to point out on that is when we talk about racism, you know, maybe you all can help me better understand something, in particular when it comes to American blacks. You know, we are mixed people. We have white family members. Are they not our people, too? You know,
yes.
You look at Benjamin Banneker, who have developed this country. I mean, even why is it that if one parent or one, let's say if you have a child who has a black parent and a white parent, one child comes out dark and the other light, or even just a white person, they're part of our families, too. So why, I don't, when we say racism, I don't think that's the good word to use, to be quite honest, because it's really skin color. If your skin is light enough, you're okay. You know, it's a pigmentocracy.
Huh.
Well, that's an interesting point, and that's probably true. And you know that light-skinned African Americans used to do a thing called passing. They would try to pass. And I got to tell you, my personal experience, my grandmother, who was Italian, was Northern Italian. So she looked
fair,
as white as she could be. She was fair, had blue eyes, looked more Swiss than Italian. And she used to do the same thing. You know, I had a grandfather who wasn't very well educated, but he spoke four or five languages, and my grandmother would only speak English to him. When he would start to speak Italian, she'd say, "Speak to me in English. I'm an American." I mean, there's certainly some truth to what you say there, that it really was the skin color. But skin color, I think the reason that skin color was important is that it relates to ethnicity. So people assume if you're dark, you're African-American, and in a racist society, that's not a good thing.
Well, okay. And, well, thank you all. But I would like to leave by saying one thing. You know, this is our home. You know, that's American blacks. You got the Africans who come and others who are African-American. I could kind of look at us as being American blacks, the ex-Negro. We've been here all along. You know, I think there is a difference. And our roots have always been here. And I thank you all. Bye-bye.
Thank you for your roots have point of view, Tabu. Appreciate it. That was really an intelligent discourse. I enjoyed that. And I wrote down pigmentocracy to make sure that I keep that handy, because that was something too. And if you'd like to join in the conversation, our toll-free number is 888-627-6008. You're listening to Senator Michael D. Brown and Maria Sanchez on something known as Shadow Politics. Senator Brown is in Iowa and sampling the state and some of the city and all it has to offer. And it sounds like your weather is cooperating.
Oh, my gosh, it's like 50 degrees here. I bought this big coat, and I've been saying to everybody, what's wrong? Everybody told me it was cold in Iowa, and somebody told, a cop actually told me today, 2 weeks ago, it was 0 degrees here. So, yeah.
Well, yeah, I envisioned that you were going to be encountering snow flurries and blizzards, and then you said the event moved to somebody's, their outdoors, and I was like, well, they wouldn't put people outside if... It was inclement, so it must
like
be doing well.
Degrees,
and just a little note that somebody can, a pearl of wisdom they can drop in a conversation, that the word caucus is a North American Indian term, and it's thought to be from the Algonquin origin, and it means a gathering of the ruling tribal chiefs, which I think is also beautiful because it brings up our Native American roots.
Right, and you know, and that might be one answer to Tabu, too, because I work with a lot of Native Americans. And believe me, they feel like all of us are interlopers, you know, that they were the original group. And, you know, a funny sideline is that it used to be that the United States government had never signed a treaty with the Seminole Indians. So it used to be that they would take out an ad every year, full page in the Miami Herald saying, please leave Florida, and if you want to take your property, take it with you, because we still own it. And I mean, they did this up until the 1970s, I think. So, those issues are very tough. And the thing I was talking about passing, I mean, as a Latina, you certainly understand that. You know,
yes.
I'm sure that was part of your culture, too.
I just got it. I don't know if I shared this with you and Kathleen, but I met a plumber at a property of mine because the water heater burst. And, of course, they had my name. And when they were finished and I had to come to pay them, I walked up to the plumber and he says, you don't look like Maria Sanchez. And I was I was like... Okay. You know, I backpedaled a little bit and I thought, okay, that's really politically incorrect, but whatever.
Yes.
So it still exists to this day. They heard a name, they created a mental picture, they saw me, and I didn't meet their prejudice. And prejudice, I don't mean in a bad way. It's just that they had convinced themselves that they knew who was going to approach them, and it didn't look like me.
Right. That's absolutely right. And it looks like we're running out of time here, but first, let me thank Karen Zulgit, who's been out here on our staff just working herself to death, and also Rima and Angel and Denisha, and we've all been out here working hard, and these are the people that really have their boots on the ground. And most of all, let me thank my co-host, Maria Sanchez, who always picks up the ball when I drop it. So I'm proud.
It's lateral passes.
Yes.
It's beautiful.
And
my
pleasure. And I was a bench warmer, so I dropped the ball.
Yes, and we should say that we aren't going to be competing with the almighty Super Bowl next week, so there'll be a best of, and then we will be back live on Sunday, February 14th.
On Valentine's Day.
That's correct.
Talk about, who knows, maybe we can get, is Dr. Ruth still alive? Maybe we can get the Love Doctor on or something. But again, thank you, Maria, for all your hard work.
And thank you, America, for listening. And I will give my lovely co-host the last word.
It's been my pleasure. And thank you, Senator, for doing what you're doing. And the most important lesson that we can pass along is every vote counts. Please register to vote and vote, regardless of your affiliation and regardless of the acrimony. Make your voice be heard.
Give the people their right to vote.